Welcome to the GVA Legal Podcast. My name is Jean Kambuni and I'm your host. On today's episode, we're delving into a fascinating and often misunderstood aspect of family law, the presumption of marriage. What does it mean? When does it apply? If I'm cohabiting, am I in a presumption of marriage? We'll attempt to answer these questions on today's episode. To discuss the presumption of marriage in Kenya, in studio with me is Dr. Elvis Avenga. Elvis is an advocate of the High Court of Kenya and he's the founding partner of Begi's Law Offices and Chambers. Welcome, Elvis.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Also in studio with me is my colleague, Lilian Opondo. Lilian is an associate in the Dispute Resolution Division here at Gikera and Vadgama Advocates. Welcome, Lilian.
Thank you very much, Jean.
It's nice to have you both. So we'll begin at the beginning and I'll turn to you, if I can call you Elvis.
Okay? Yeah. Elvis.
What constitutes a marriage under Kenyan law? Let's begin at the beginning.
Well, a marriage, the five regimes of marriage under the Marriage Act, we have Christian marriages, civil marriages, Islamic marriages, customary marriages. Actually, that should be four of them, yeah? A marriage is defined as a voluntary union of a man and a woman. It is heterosexual in nature within the context of the Marriage Act. That is just, from the beginning of it in terms of definition of what a marriage actually is. And it has to be registered because Section 3 of the Marriage Act is saying marriage is a voluntary union of a man and a woman, whether in a monogamous or polygamous union and registered in accordance with the Act. So even as we discuss the presumption of marriage, the very basic tenet where we start from is that a marriage properly so-called under the Act must be registered in accordance with the Marriage Act.
So let me break this down as simply as I can for our listeners. If at all, under any of those regimes, you say that you are married, it's not that I went to the church, it's that my marriage is registered.
Exactly.
Either at the civil registry, so the copy of my certificate is there, and that is what proves that I'm married. So if I'm living with that certificate in my house and it never made it to the registry, I do not have a valid, if I can call it that,
exactly,
marriage.
Yeah.
Well, that is interesting to note. So if your marriage never got to the registry, you might be doing something else. So now, under what circumstances can you presume that, and then can a presumption of marriage arise? Because while that is all well and good, we were discussing earlier with Lilian that human beings are very interesting and we don't necessarily get married. In fact, a new terminology has come about nowadays and we call ourselves partners. So if I have a partner, we've been living together for, 4 or 5 years. We have one child together, 2-year-old, and hypothetically, and we have some property together. We've bought it over this period of our union of 5 years. Can we say that it's a presumption of marriage? What would constitute a presumption of marriage? We'll start with you, then we'll go to you.
Okay, so maybe I should start by defining what a presumption is, yeah? A presumption is a context in which a court of law treats or adopts a particular attitude or treatment towards a specific fact. For example, if you said, if we talk about a presumption of marriage, we are saying that the court is adopting an attitude and treating parties as if they were married for purposes of a separate, totally different determination that needs to be made. Normally, from history, without going into too much legalese, a presumption of marriage exists where parties have long cohabited. They call it by cohabitation and repute. So two people who would otherwise have been legally married but have not been legally married, but have been living together for a period of time called long cohabitation and repute, in the sense that they have made people around them, the family, neighbors, and all that, to assume they were married without having actually fulfilled the full processes for marriage. There can exist in such a situation what we call a presumption of marriage. And under the Evidence Act, A presumption is just that. It's a presumption in the sense that it can always be challenged. It can always, evidence can be brought to the contrary to say that, no, you guys were living together, but we did not believe that you were actually married. In that sense, then the presumption goes away. But at the beginning, I would say, even as we set this conversation going on, a presumption of marriage does not create a marriage itself. It's usually in the context of a larger determination. For example, when you're talking about the law of succession, issues to do with inheritance, or we are talking about matrimonial property, some bigger determination where you'd find, and most of the times it's usually in the law of succession, where you find the court makes a presumption of marriage or declares a presumption of marriage for purposes of determining a secondary bigger question, for instance, of whether the person is entitled to inheritance or not. So that I usually get people asking and saying, you know what, I've been living and cohabiting with this person for a period of time, and we don't think there's a need to do the formal processes because even the law will treat us as married. I will then say that is an incorrect position, which the courts have clarified of late, that a presumption, especially after the current Marriage Act, does not create a marriage. It is just a question of evidence for a secondary purpose. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to come back to that story that you had for, we've been living together and really,
yeah.
I'll come back. So I'll put a pin on that and come to you, Lillian. What do you think constitutes a presumption of marriage?
Thank you, Jean, for that. What people know about presumption of marriage, what they know about it is that they refer to it as come we stay. I could say that because that is the most common term that is used within the common people. So, for a presumption of marriage to arise, there are several factors that have to be established by the court. One of them is that there must be a long cohabitation between the parties, that is the man and the woman. And this long cohabitation must be for a period of several years. Mostly it is usually between 7 years and above. So when a couple have stayed together for such a long period, then they can be presumed to have been married. But that alone does not constitute a presumption of marriage. There are other factors which have to be considered. The other factor is that the parties must have consented to be in that relationship. Having consented, what does it mean? One party does not just come to the relationship thinking on by themselves that they are in a marriage, while the other party mind is all together elsewhere. Another factor that has to be considered is that the parties must have an intention. There must be an intention. So, you know, there are those people who get into relationships, long-term relationships for such long years just to have a feeling of companionship, but in essence, they do not have that desire to be recognized in a long marriage. The other factor is the parties must be presumed by the people around them that they are in a relationship.
I think for what example, he was referring to as repute.
Yeah, repute, yeah. For example, you know, when you go home for long visits to the rural homes, you carry yourself as a married couple. People around you see, around the couple see them as a couple, as a married couple. So that alone, they can use that as a basis to confirm or to lay claim to a presumption of marriage. Another thing that has to be considered perhaps is the presence of children in such a relationship. So you've been together for 20 years. You have children in that relationship, grown-ups. So when a party comes and says that there was no relationship, the court can look at that and say they are products of that relationship. So that would be used to presume a marriage between the parties. Yeah, basically those are some of the situations or circumstances that allow for a presumption of marriage.
Thank you for that. Now, Elvis, I come back to the situation that you mentioned where you've met couples who've told you that they really don't want to get married. Mm-hmm. In fact, they think that the law will presume them as married. There's no need for them to go through any sort of procedure, any sort of... it's expensive. You know, there's many reasons you can give yourself not to do this. I want us to just clarify, what's the difference between a customary marriage, a long cohabitation, the presumption of marriage. Okay. Let's try and draw some sort of line or demarcation between those things.
So customary marriage is clearly provided for in detail in the Marriage Act. And one of the very key points that make a customary marriage a marriage is the payment of dowry, which has to be paid in line with the customary rights of the particular community. Sometimes we have other unique processes that must be done depending on the community. But a customary marriage, unlike previously to the current regime of the Marriage Act, where people just do a customary marriage and end it at that, there is currently a requirement for registration of customary marriages and getting of a certificate for that. So customary marriages right now, there was a gray area between customary marriages and presumptions of marriage, because customary marriages never used to get registered, but now they are. So that clears it out. Now, cohabitation, on the other hand, simply means it's actually defined under the Marriage Act. Section 2 of the Marriage Act that defines what cohabitation is, that says, in a nutshell, when you, for purposes of our audience, living together with a person, as simple as that. Now, when we talk about presumption of marriage and now we talk about long cohabitation, that then brings up the issues, as what our colleague mentioned, the longevity, 7 years and above, usually, and so on and so forth. Yeah, but simply, when we talk about cohabitation, it's just simple as that. But presumption of marriage now tries to go a bit beyond the simple cohabitation to all the elements which she mentioned about, and again does not create a marriage the way a normal marriage under the Marriage Act would be.
Now, you spoke about this, I think, in passing, but I want us now to dial down on it. Mm. You said that more often than not, the determination of the existence of a presumption of marriage, it's to make a bigger determination on a different issue. Yeah. So, and when I think about that, I think when you talked about succession, I thought about, in a regular marriage, there's certain rights and responsibilities that a married person gets, a wife gets, mm-hmm. a husband gets. In a presumption of marriage, do the parties to it have any rights and responsibilities? Do they have anything that they can claim? Or is it because of that exclusion, that fact that they cannot claim certain things, that they do come to court claiming that, you know what, this relationship we had to mean something?
Presumption of marriage does not really create, again, doesn't create a marriage. So all the marital rights and responsibilities that would be due to a married couple does not extend to people who are in a presumption of marriage, unless later on the court determines through, just as you've said, determination of a bigger question. I'll give you an example. A few years back, I had an interesting case. There was this gentleman who came to my office and he was not sure of his status. He had lived with this lady for a long period of time. They had gotten children, but they had not formalized their relationship. But he was at that point where he was not sure. He wanted out of that relationship, and he feared that he might quit the relationship. And then when he passes away, because he was a bit unwell, when he passes away, the lady would go to court and say, I need a presumption of marriage to be declared by the court so that I can inherit. And he did not want to do that. So he needed a solution to that. So what we did, in simple, we went to court just in the same way we'd file a divorce process, but made it clear to court that we are not presuming the existence of any marriage, because for a divorce to happen, there has to have been a valid marriage for that purpose. We simply wanted the court to declare that, one, there was no marriage in the first place, so a divorce cannot be granted, and to nullify any existence of any potential presumption of marriage as at that point. And the court actually granted those orders as such. Yeah, it was appealed. The other side appealed on it, and the High Court affirmed the decision of the Magistrates Court and said, once there's a declaration that there was no marriage, it ends at that point. There is no presumption of marriage, and it can never arise again. Yeah. So that's the mechanics around presumptions of marriage. Yeah. It's a question of evidence at the end of the day. And presumption of marriage is not the only presumption. For instance, in criminal law, we have the presumption of innocence. Yeah. And many other presumptions. The court just creates or assumes the existence of a particular state of fact for purposes of another determination. And earlier on, you asked about cohabitation, yeah? Mm-hmm. I've been able to pull out section 2 that defines cohabitation as to live in an arrangement which an unmarried couple lives together in a long-term relationship that resembles a marriage. So there's that inclusion of those two words, that resembles, meaning the framers of the Marriage Act are aware that cohabitation is not, doesn't create a marriage. It just creates a situation that resembles a marriage by itself. And now, later on, now the issues of presumption comes in.
I have two things I want to come back to on what you said. The first one, I think I'll go to Lillian. I think, and we discussed this before because I wanted to blindside you. But yeah, you brought yourself and gave me the situation that I was alluding to before. Yeah. I asked her, can you get a divorce from presumption of marriage or some sort of annulment? And she had some thoughts. So let's go to your thoughts and how they measure up to his, because I feel like they align in the thinking that you both had.
Okay, thank you. I believe it is the court to make a determination whether a presumption of marriage exists. And that is based on the evidence that the parties will present before the court, just like counsel has stated. So if parties have been in a relationship for, the way I mentioned earlier, over 20 years, they have children in that relationship who are adults. And let's say the wife has, in her mind, she believes that she's in a marriage. I believe that wife can move the court to presume an existence of marriage in those circumstances. But then the burden will be upon that person who moves the court for a presumption of marriage to prove to the court that indeed it existed. And as I said earlier, the party will need to prove all those factors that constitute a presumption of marriage. So in that case, if the court now finds that those factors have been proved to the expected standard, which the law says are balance of probabilities, then in that case, the court may presume that there existed a marriage, and out of that, that relationship can be nullified. Those are my thoughts on that.
Okay, now Elvis, I come back to you and the situation that you presented where the gentleman was trying to ascertain that no relationship existed for the purposes of a greater thing. Now, let's talk about what if that greater thing is succession. So one of the parties to a presumption of marriage has passed on, or rather, we've not even determined it's a presumption of marriage. One of the parties to what could be assumed is a long cohabitation has passed on. There are children. There is property that both of them contributed to in some way or form. And now two things either want to happen. We're having the separation and I want to divide what is mine and you can keep what is yours. Or you have died and I'd like some sort of inheritance, one, because I was a dependent of yours. Or two, we have children and these children also lay claim to your estate. What happens in that situation?
So from case law, if the court actually determines that there was a presumption of marriage, then it will proceed to treat whoever is claiming. For instance, if it's a wife or whose, for succession purposes, the man passed away and now the wife is saying that we were not legally married, but we tick all the boxes for presumption of marriage, and then I should be able to inherit in that sense. Once the court makes a determination and says, yes, we are going to treat you as, we are going to presume the existence of a presumption of marriage, what the court is in essence saying is, we are going to treat you as a wife for purposes of succession. So she will inherit or have claim over the estate of the man in the same way the legit wives who would have had claim. Of course, for children are automatically entitled to inherit from their parents, whether or not their parents had a legal marriage or not. That one does not change anything. But now for the wife, for the lady, if the court says you have a presumption of marriage, then they'll, for purposes of that determination of the issues of succession, they will treat her as if she was married.
And now onto matrimonial property. Nobody has died. We just want to exit this relationship. It's been a long time. And we have joint property, some contributed more than others. But how would that division happen?
My partner actually had a case that was turning on matrimonial property issues. Yeah, and in a nutshell, what the court said is that you cannot move the court for dissolution of matrimonial or distribution of matrimonial property under the Matrimonial Property Act unless there was a valid marriage, because that act deals with, like, for instance, contribution, issues of contribution, Section 6 of the Matrimonial Property Act, defining matrimonial property to be property which has been acquired, developed within the course of marriage. So the courts, the High Court and the Court of Appeal has actually determined that the term marriage, as stated in the Matrimonial Property Act, can only be marriage as set out in the Marriage Act. So where you have two parties who've lived together, accumulated property together, but they were not legally married, maybe they existed a presumption of marriage, they still cannot move the court for distribution of the matrimonial property or declaration of interest in matrimonial property under the Act. At that point, then the person, if the issues of contribution, they can be able to resolve it in another court, maybe a civil process, where the person says, hey, I brought this is what I brought in, and I want to get it out, just not under a matrimonial property regime.
Thank you for that. Lillian, do you have anything to add?
The very recent case that was determined by the Supreme Court in, I think it was in January this year, touched on a similar case where the parties had been in a long cohabitation since around 1986, and the man was claiming a share of a property that was acquired during that relationship. So I think the court said that there are rules that have to be formulated for, is it situationship or such kind of relationship, so that parties who find themselves in such circumstances can move the court for distribution of a share, for a share in a property that was acquired during that relationship. So basically, what this means that if parties in a cohabitation, a long cohabitation, or in a come and stay relationship acquire property while in that relationship, then the only way they can move the court is just the way Kanzola said, in a different forum, but not within the Matrimonial Properties Act or the Marriage Act, because there is basically no relationship that has arisen from, no recognized relationship that has arisen from that situationship they find themselves in. Yeah. Then in any case, if they have contributed towards the acquisition of that property, probably the court will distribute that property according to the contribution each party has made towards the acquisition of the property.
You're very right. Yes, the Supreme Court did recognize that there are interdependent relationships, I think that's what they call them, outside marriage, that are prevalent in society. And they propose that the National Assembly and the Senate, in collaboration with the AG, formulate and enact laws that deal with the cohabitees in long-term relationships and their rights, their obligations. Mm. So I think that would be a very helpful thing, as this is a reality in our life. I want to ask our final question. And here I'm going to try and just protect our listeners or just help them think through their relationships, because these relationships are very prevalent today. How would you advise an individual or a couple that may find themselves in a situation where it's difficult for them to ascertain whether they're in a, they fall within the parameters of a presumed marriage or in a long-term cohabitation? How can they protect their interests there? And mostly this usually falls on their financial and property interests. How can they protect their interests going forward? I think I'll start with you, then we end with you.
Okay, thank you. I believe the Marriage Act was enacted. It's very clear the kind of marriages that we have in Kenya. And it has simplified everything. It goes ahead to even recognize customary marriages. I believe what parties should do is just ensure that the marriages are recognized under the Act. It doesn't take much. It's something that parties or spouses or couples need to work on. Secondly, if parties find themselves in those kind of relationships, because some couples do not want to enter into long-term relationships that result in marriages. So what is best done in such circumstances is to get into maybe contracts, agreements, sort of, so that they can secure their interest in any property that they acquire during those presumed relationships, which we now call here presumed marriages or long-term cohabitation, whatever it is. But they need to make sure that their interests are secure so that in the event they go their separate ways, they are able to at least claim their properties back. Thank you.
Yeah. I'd just agree with counsel in what she says, and just say it does not mean that you do not trust your partner by insisting, for instance, on having a written agreement on how you're investing together, if you want to invest together. It just protects you in the event the parties decide to go separate ways. Apart from the registration of marriages, which then now create very binding situations, even in terms of land, when you talk about disposal of land, one of the consents required is a spousal consent, which does not apply when there is no marriage. So you might find someone just saying, I'm coming to court or running to court to complain that their partner wanted to dispose the property without their consent. And the court saying, but you are not a spouse at the end of the day. So the best thing is to have paper trail, have agreements, have email correspondences, you know, things that can be able to back you up whenever there's need to now move and protect yourself where the relationship has gone south.
Thank you for that. And I think that that's the best way to go. You know, like in those circumstances, based on the circumstances that you have, coming up with prenuptial agreements before you get into that that long-term cohabitation. If you have predetermined that you do not want to get married, a prenuptial agreement would be a necessity. Because as you said, there is no mechanism that you can use to divide the property in the regular way you would with a marriage. So a prenuptial agreement that states, this is how we want to assign our property, this is how we want to deal with it, this is how we want to dispose of it, and this is what happens in the event that this union collapses, would be very important. But if you already find yourself in one, nothing stops you from negotiating a postnuptial agreement. Mm-hmm. Just coming together and agreeing over this union, we have bought two houses, or we have one house, five cars, two cars, we bought an Uber. This is what happens in the event that this relationship comes to an end. You get the Uber, we go, we sell it, we split it 50-50, or depending on the contribution that we give, because you do know what you each contributed to it. So I think that is an important thing to do. That brings us to the end of this episode. I'd like to thank my guests, Dr. Elvis Abenga. Thank you, Elvis.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for coming and agreeing to our invitation. And I'd also like to thank my colleague, Lilian Opondo. Thank you very much, Lilian.
Thank you very much for having me in this session.
Thank you so much for coming through, and also for being in Nairobi. You know, you could have been in Mombasa. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm your host, Jean Kambuni. Tell us what you think about this episode in the comment section of our social media pages or on email. Our email address is info@gvalawfirm.com. You can also follow Gikera and Badgama Advocates on social media. You can find us on LinkedIn, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as GVA Law Firm. Thank you again for joining us on the GVA Legal Podcast.